Yes, hello, this is Danhausen here, very nice for evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, and ever cape wearing producer, my friend, my brother, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Almost always wearing the cape. Alive inside the studio here. And then, yes, great to be back here. Another episode live, if you're listening to us live, of Bob After Dark.
Or watching live.
Watching live, the Jed TV, the WJOB radio, or you may be listening on the podcast side of things. All that good stuff, Bob. We're on Apple, Spotify, Hulu.
We're not on Hulu.
We're not on Hulu.
No, we're not on Hulu.
Netflix?
No, we're not on Netflix.
WWE Network.
I don't even think the WWE Network's even a thing anymore, Count Panic.
Nickelodeon.
I think still exists, yes.
Wouldn't it be great to get on Nickelodeon?
Would you get slimed?
Do they still do that?
I don't think that's a thing anymore.
I think Nickelodeon's still a thing. And I'm pretty sure their slime is still somewhere in the... Mark Summers can't have all the slime. He's got to share it out to people. But that'd be, that's... if we could get a something, Nickelodeon, call us.
We could be hosting the next Kids' Choice Awards, right?
Yeah,
the Orange Blimp Awards.
We could do that, the Kids' Choice Awards. Well, you know, it was a very popular show when I was a kid. You were a kid as well. Are You Afraid of the Dark? And this is kind of like the same aspect.
Are You Afraid of this? Are You Afraid of the Dark is a legitimate help what prefaces what Bob After Dark is today.
It could be Are You Afraid of Bob After Dark?
Are you afraid of Bob After Dark? That depends on the night, I guess.
And we could do, what's the saying they always say at the end of the campfire? The approval of the Midnight Society.
Submitted your approval from the Midnight Society.
We could do stuff like that.
Yeah, fill in the blank.
Well, think about it, Bob.
Yeah, absolutely.
Think about Nickelodeon.
So let's get your weekend update, Count Panic.
Yeah, you know, Bob, a lot going on, you know. I flew in a jet. That's not a lie.
Oh, really?
No. I got to give a shout out to the folks at the Gary Air Show, Bob.
Mr. Berger's a part of the air show?
Yeah. You know, they let me hop on a plane with the Golden Knights there, the U.S. Army Golden Knights. And I didn't jump off, Bob. Flying in the plane was enough for me. But it was a great time at the Gary Air Show. It was 2 days of air action. And, to be in a plane, Bob, these people are parachuting out of it. It's pretty intense, but it was a good time, great weather. And I landed safely to make sure I told them, make sure I'm back by Tuesday night. I got to be on Bob After Dark.
Exactly. Well, we appreciate having you back, Count Panic.
Next, if they asked Bob, would you want to parachute out of a plane?
Nope.
Skydive.
No, I'm good.
Not a skydiving guy.
No, I, not on the lack of that I wouldn't want to, not that I'm afraid, yeah. I just know my luck. Mm-hmm. Parachute won't open. Parachute I know it. Won't. Guarantee it.
Yeah, well, that's, you're being pessimistic there, Bob. You gotta be optimistic.
I count on my half empty kind of guy.
I gotta thank again the folks at along the South Shore. South Shore Stephanie, who you know and love, Bob. Yeah, I'm gonna try to get a campaign going. Bob flying, do Bobs fly?
Do bobs fly?
God is my witness. I thought bobs could fly.
If you buy into the theory that I am Mothman, then yes,
might be something they could do next year, Bob.
Fair enough, Count.
What about you?
existing.
Yeah, action packed.
Mow the lawn.
You mowed the lawn.
Yes, I did mow the lawn.
How was that?
That wasn't even during the weekend. What did I do during the
weekend?
Why do
you have to? You should have people to mow your lawn.
I don't.
A team.
No. No.
Stars don't mow their lawns.
Well, either way.
They're just like you.
It's nice to be here. I'll just say it's nice to be here. Kind
yeah,
of
good, Bob. It's good to be. Could be anywhere.
Yes, we're doing the show remote tonight. Which is totally fine. It just means that the show continues. I'm just sitting at home and Cal Panic's at the studio tonight.
So it's like we're really together, but it's the power of the internet. And through also the power of the phone lines, 209-845-1100. Bob, it's lighting up already over here.
Oh, it's lighting up. Yeah. Take the caller
take
live.
Take the phone call live. Hey, caller.
Hey, what's wrong with your luck, Bob?
My what?
Your luck.
Your luck. You don't have good luck? I always thought you was a lucky guy.
You know, I'm lucky when it doesn't count. I'm lucky when it doesn't count. But when I need it to count, it doesn't count.
Well, let me tell you something. There was this guy, he got up in the morning, he looked at his watch, it was 7:07. Okay. So he went down, he went in the kitchen, he looked at the calendar, it was July 7th. Seventh day of the seventh month. He went out to get the paper, and he seen a bus go by. Bus number 7. He went to the deli on the corner there, and he got himself a sandwich and a coffee. 7:77 came out to. So he said, man, this is my lucky day. So he left work a little early, and he went down to the racetrack. So he's looking at the spreadsheet of the horses. And in the seventh race, there's a horse named Lucky 7. Wearing number 7. So he's, man, this is unbelievable. Throws all his money on the horse. The horse came in 7th. Come on, Bob. You get it, right?
I mean, I guess I could be the 7 guy.
Yeah. So you know what? Hey, but you know what? Jumping out of plane, I think you could do it. I think that's something you could do, right, Count?
I think Bob could do it. I think we're going to make it happen. Bob's going to jump out of a plane.
Did you jump out of a plane, Count Panic?
I did not jump out of the plane, Bob.
Yeah, well, we got to get him maybe before we get you or both. Huh?
I was happy. I was happy just being in the plane. I didn't want to leave the plane.
Well, maybe caller Bill will call up and maybe see, you know,
Bill will jump out of the plane.
Yeah. All right, I'll let you guys get on with the show.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate you.
There you go.
All right, Bob.
How about that, Bob?
How about that? The 7th guy.
7th guy, and he's volunteering you to jump off a plane as well. But let's take. Right. Are you on the what's it called? Not the TikTok.
The Twitchverse?
The Twitch.
Yes, I'm on.
Can you
the
do
Twitch.
Polls on Twitch?
I can, but it's a little quiet in there tonight.
Okay, just making sure. You could always make it a poll later on. Hey, should Bob jump off a plane? Yes or no?
with a parachute, please. Careful how you phrase that, company.
You got to have a parachute, Bob. And I'm sure they don't let people just go out there and jump by themselves. You got to be, you're going to have somebody taking care of you up there in the air as far as jumping out goes. But I don't know. Could be a good promotion.
Could be.
Yeah.
All right. So if this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we are your weekly show where we talk about legends, lore, and the supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course, Count Panic's favorite milkshake.
I'm a pretty simple guy. A chocolate milkshake there, Bob. Chocolate. No thrills.
Maybe no thrills.
You can put a little banana in there, too. Make it a little fancy. How about yours?
You know, a cookies and cream milkshake goes a long way, Count Panic.
Cookies and cream. Do you have a favorite spot to get the cookies and cream milkshake?
I do not. I don't have a personal endorsement.
No. But if anybody that wants to endorse us that makes cookies and cream shakes, I'm looking at you.
Now you're talking.
Steak and Shake, right? Don't they do that? Don't they have all the shakes?
I think they're a little too big for us, but you know,
no, they're
a
not.
Local ice cream place, if they want to make the Bob After Dark milkshake, what does the Bob After Dark milkshake consist of?
Cheese curds.
Just the cheese curds.
It's just put cheese curds in a blender and call it a smoothie.
All right.
Call it a milkshake. So, I don't know. It would have to be like the colors of the show, right? Purple and black and
yeah, so grape ice cream?
I don't know.
what well, purple sherbet. Right?
Yeah. Something like that. I don't know. What's a name all the purple foods we could we'll figure it out. Grape's fine. The grape.
Oh, Heather, that's shake. Okay. We're Jed TV, you can watch it there. You could be watching on the Twitchverse. It's fine. Same concept.
Heather wants you to jump off a plane. With a parachute.
Oh, yeah. Tonight's question, by the way, folks. Do you want to see me jump out of an airplane with a parachute?
John said yes.
219-845-1100.
Heather said yes.
Heather said yes. Oh, boy.
I said yes. So that's three that's versus not, one that, right now.
No, that's a terrible idea. I don't like it. Parachute. I don't like it. It's a terrible idea. Anyway, so we split the show up into two parts. First part of the show is the weird spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, and me, the Bob, go scouring the internet to find news articles about those strange and unusual, the creepy and the very spooky, the advances. I always, you know, I try to come up with the same words every week for this. It's like ghosts being caught on camera, blurry shots of Bigfoot making it in the major media, lights in the sky. And advances in science that borderline on science fiction.
Yeah.
So that's the news of the week. Comp Panic is not prepared for any of them, and we get the hashtag Panic's Take, which gives us the opportunity for Comp Panic to tell us what he thinks about the articles.
Yeah, I could tell you right now. Well, not now.
I mean, not right now. You got to listen. You got to read the article. You got to listen to the article.
Got to listen to the article.
All right, so the first article comes from Cron, or Tron, C-H-R-O-N. Strange cosmic object found in nearby galaxy baffles astronomers. This is written by Ariana Garcia. A mysterious object is raising more questions than answers. Astronomers have detected an unusually powerful and compact object in a nearby galaxy, one so bright and unique that it may represent an entirely new class of cosmic phenomena. The source, named Punctum, was discovered in galaxy NGC 4945, located just about a little bit 11 million light years away, so not far, by a research team by Elena Shablov. Okay, let's try this. Shablovinskaya. Shablovinskaia.
Was that something?
You got that?
Yeah, I got that. I wrote that down.
Okay. Of the Universidad Diego Portales in Chile. Sorry, folks, I do not speak the native language of Chile. I'm trying my best here. According to a report from space.com, the object appeared in a millimeter wavelength radio data captured by the Atacama Large Millimeter Submillimeter Array, or ALMA, a high-resolution observatory based in the Chilean Andes. A peer-reviewed paper detailing the discovery has been accepted for publication in Astronomy and Astrophysics, with a preprint available on ARXIV, if you're into reading scientific journalistic things. Unlike more familiar astrophysical objects, Punctum does not appear invisible or X-ray light, according to space.com. Instead of it reveals itself only at millimeter wavelengths, a trait more associated with a cloud, interstellar clouds, or a faint emission of proplanetary disks. Yet Punctum defies those expectations due to extraordinary brightness. When you put it into context, Punctum is astonishingly bright, said the scientist, told space.com, noting its emission outshines meganeters by up to 100,000 times and surpasses all known supernova remnants save for the Crab Nebula in brightness. What makes Punctum even more perplexing is its stability. Observations over time show no significant change in its output, ruling out short-lived flares or transient events, according to space.com. The signal is also strangely polarized, suggesting a highly organized magnetic field, a trait common in compact sources such as pulsars, magnetars, and quasars. While synchrotron radiation caused by fast-moving particles spiraling along the magnetic field lines could explain its emission, existing models struggle to account for the extreme intensity. The team has considered several possibilities, including an unusually bright magnetar or compact supernova remnant in dense environment, but no current explanation fits it cleanly. Because of its relatively small size and strong polarization, Punctum likely would have gone unnoticed in past surveys. In addition, the scientists told Space.com that the James Webb Space Telescope may provide crucial insights, and it can detect the object in infrared wavelengths, where emission lines or dust features could reveal more about its nature. Hashtag panic steak.
Yeah, so again, it's so bright, Bob, just glaring, basically, but we don't know enough about it, it sounds like, from this article. Well, a little bit about it, but, you know, the scientists got a tough job, Bob. They got to stare into this this bright stuff, these bright objects. Got to wear sunglasses, Bob. Protect your eyes.
You got to do something.
Still don't know enough about it, though, it sounds like, Bob. They're still, looks like, they're still in the investigation process, it seems like to me. A little bit there.
A little bit. So, Companic, you know that we always talk about how the weird and unusual is like a bowling league and that we're all on the same league,
yeah,
but we vote for different teams.
Yeah, that's true.
One of them is true crime. True crime and paranormal kind of go hand in hand sometimes. I'm not a true crime podcast. Hats off true crime podcasters everywhere. You guys do a lot of hard work and a lot more research than I do.
Yeah.
And that says a lot.
We don't do that stuff.
It's not, I love listening to it. I don't think I could produce the content because it's, you know, it's sometimes very disturbing.
Yeah,
what we talk about is we talk about in hypotheticals.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I'm telling you ghost stories. True crime stories are actual, legitimate, true 1000% this happened. And sometimes they're so gruesome, it's just hard to fathom that human beings are capable of such nonsense.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
All right, so anywho, with that being said, our next article comes to us from the Miami New Times, written by Naomi Feinstein. Virgin is launching a spooky true crime cruise from Miami. While on board, guests can attend live true crime podcast recordings, exclusive meet and greets, and costume contests. If you just finished binging Amy Bradley is Missing on Netflix, there is a new cruise just for you. Virgin Voyagers, in partnership with iHeartMedia, is launching its first ever true crime voyage this fall for your true crime junkies. In a statement, the company calls the new adults-only cruise a fine night escape into the Caribbean, adding it combines warm sunny days with infamously chilling cold cases. The Valiant Lady departs Port Miami on Friday, October 10th, and sails to Puerto Plata in the Dominican Republic and the Virgin Voyages Beach Club of Benini before returning Miami on Wednesday, October 15th. Guests can attend live podcast recordings of iHeart Podcast's most popular shows like Betrayal, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, and Buried Bones. The excursion also includes exclusive meet and greets, how to podcast workshops, giveaways, and themed cocktails and bites inspired by infamous cases. In a statement, Nicole Huang, a senior vice president of the fleet experiences at Virgin Voyages, says new offerings blends the intricate and incredible storytelling with the indulgence and elevated travel. We're taking everything our sailors have love about the Virgin Voyages and adding a new twist for Halloween season. It's going to be mysterious, glamorous, and nothing else at sea. Nothing else like it at sea. Hashtag panic stick.
Yeah, I mean, hey, why not? I mean, that kind of dwells into what we're what we're talking about here. And as far as the true crime goes, I mean, this is something anybody could check out, Bob. I mean, it might get a little rocky sometimes, but at the end of the day, people are fascinated by this stuff, right? I mean, people are, what do they call it, Bob? What do the kids do? They binge watch.
They binge watch. They
this
binge
sounds watch. Like someone you could binge watch here. Much like Bob After Dark. You could binge watch this, too.
I mean, I've done it. Binge watch. You've been watched Bob After Dark before?
Episode 1 to episode what we're on now.
203.
Yeah.
Depends hold on, who you ask. I gotta blow my nose. Give
oh,
me
hold on.
To the crowd.
Hey, no, I'll just create the version. Oh, he turned his mic off. That's good. I didn't want to. That was too far to turn his mic off over here. But I wonder how long that would take. If you...
Sorry about that, Count Panic. It is the first time ever I had to stop to blow my nose for a show.
That happens.
You know, for the live audio, for podcast fans, they're like, well, why don't you just edit it out? You have to understand, Count Panic and I are live on radio and live on TV
we don't
as
want
we
to
do
cheap
the
out
show.
This, yeah.
No, so when I need to blow my nose or sneeze, I usually hold it until the end of the show, or if I have to cough, I am holding back that cough for as long as humanly possible. That sneeze was coming because I'm staring at my ring light right now because that's my cadence. Yeah. And my ring light, by staring at the bright lights, are making my sinuses drain. So
you're melting over there, Bob. But that's why, you know, you got to take if you're listening on the podcast, this is the full, we don't edit anything out. Nothing gets edited out of these podcasts. The good, the bad, and the ugly of the episode stays in so you can hear it. But yeah, binge watching, Bob. I think if you start from episode 1 up until the episode now, what would that? How long would that take you to binge watch that? About how many months? Years?
That'd be months. You had to think our average episode is an hour, yeah. So what's 200
some longer,
hours?
Some shorter.
What's 200 hours?
Oh, you're going to make me go to the math.
10 days?
I think, Bob, somebody did message us one time. It would take 10 years.
So you say it would take 10 years to binge my show?
From the first radio show.
Oh, from the first radio show.
To
that's
now,
tough.
About 10 years, I think.
Vic says in chat, their arms were cut off. Their arms were cut off. Their ears were cut off. And for the true crime enthusiast,
that's what you know. But the people again binge watch; they eat that stuff up.
Hey, look, man! 90% more like popular podcasts than what I do in the paranormal are definitely true crime. I would argue that true crime podcasts are probably some of the most popular podcasts out there in the world.
We could do like a whodunit episode. I'm Bob After Dark.
I don't, you know, the closest thing I could think of that we've done, like true crimey, the Hex Hollow murders. Yeah, I mean, I'd have to find like true crime cases that are like seeped into the paranormal and the occult. But a lot of times that just gives people the bad, you know, gives certain people in communities bad raps. You know what I'm saying? So it's not very fun for me to go on there and be like, the witches killed them, and be like, no, because witches don't, I don't know. That's tough when you get into the occulty crimes, because they like to blame everybody else.
We'll think of it.
I don't know.
We'll workshop it.
I don't know. Maybe for April Fool's Day next year, I'll do a true crime case, but I don't know. That's a tough pill to swallow.
Are we make our own?
It's like a... Wouldn't that be fake crime?
Yeah, it would be real. Fake crime. Is there fake crime news?
I mean, I'm sure.
We should start the fake crime show where, like, it was Bob in the library with a.
As the that's called Clue Co. Oh.
With a spatula. I don't know why you have a spatula in the library, but.
All right. You got ready for our final news article?
Sure.
Our final news article comes to us from actually our pal Chuck sent this in to
Chuck.
Me first. Yeah, friend of the show, Chuck.
Chuck's sending us letters?
Chuck, yeah, well, Chuck sends me news articles when they come up, and this one's pretty interesting. Sent me the Vice article written by Ashley Fike, F-I-K-E, so we'll call it Fike. A gigantic 250-mile mysterious blob is headed straight for New York City. And yes, you heard that correctly. This is a real news story. There's a molten blob the size of Maine slowly crawling its way under the eastern United States, and scientists aren't exactly sure what it wants. What they do know is that it's moving towards New York. The underground mass, formerly known as the Northern Appalachian Anomaly, is made of abnormally hot rock deep beneath the Earth's crust. It stretches 220 miles wide and sits about 125 miles down, oozing southwest at a glacier glacier pace of 12 miles per million years. So it's taking its time, but it's definitely not sitting still. This thermal upwelling has long been puzzling the future of North American geology, said the study lead Tom Gernon, a geoscientist at the University of Southampton. For a while, researchers figured it was just leftover magma from when the North America split off from the Africa 180 million years ago. However, that timeline didn't align. This event appears to have occurred more recently, approximately 80 million years ago, when Greenland and Canada separated. The map its movement, scientists used a seismic tomography, which is essentially an MRI for tectonic plates. Their simulation showed the blob had been pushing its way inland like a subterranean lava lamp sludge. That pressure may be why the Appalachian Mountains are still standing tall despite millions of years of erosion. The hot rock beneath them acts like a jack, lifting the crust up from below. As the blob moves, it can also help explain rare volcanic activity or how diamonds reach the surface. Another blob, this one under Greenland, might even have been affecting how ice sheets melt from below. Basically, these underground hot heat zones are reshaping the land long after the continents themselves stop drifting. Eventually, the blob will drift past the Appalachians, and without the thermal lift, the mountains will start to slump. Erosion will pick up slack, wearing away that the elevation that's been stubbornly hanging on. There won't be a collapse, just a slow unwinding process that started millions of years ago. Until then, land holds shape because of the force no one can see. There's no ancient debris or leftover heat. It's a living system, still moving, still pressing upward. And if you thought the ground was settled, think again. The continent is still sorting itself out. Hashtag panic state.
Yeah, so this, again, it revolves around a blob, Bob?
Yes.
A blob. So this blob is really kind of causing havoc here.
It's causing something.
It's causing something. I'm going to call it havoc. I always said, be careful of blobs. Nothing good could... I don't think there's ever been a good blob out there, Bob. They're all bad blobs.
All bad blobs.
Like, you never hear a story about a good blob. Like, a blob saves the day, or blob helps old woman cross the street. Like, blobs are pretty... Like, in movies, science fiction, comic books, blobs are always considered bad. And I don't know about this blob, but I guess... You know, doesn't seem like a great blob to me, but what's your stance on blobs?
I mean, this one's made of magma, and it's kind of terrifying, and it's making its way towards New York.
This is like a movie.
This is like a movie, yes.
Didn't we see a movie about this?
I think it's called The Blob.
Well,
there's a couple movies made about it, actually.
Yeah. Well, how do we stop it?
Oh, scientists say they don't know why it's moving.
Lasers?
Yes, shoot lasers at the blob.
Shoot lasers at the blob. Simple. Why not?
Truly,
just put us in charge.
Truly, you're the finest of scientists, Count Panic.
I would just be like, why don't you shoot some lasers at it? What's the worst that could happen? It starts growing, it helps it, it gets bigger. It's like Godzilla right. size at that point.
100%.
You know, but all the big blobs start off as little blobs. So.
Is this like your favorite news story we've ever covered?
I think it's a fun story.
It's terrifying.
I think this is
a giant blob of magma.
No, you're right. Hopefully nothing bad happens, but it's fun to think about blobs. If something bad happens, I take it all back. This is good stand-up routine. What's the deal with blobs?
What's the deal with blobs?
Yeah.
All right, Count, you ready to take a quick break?
Sure.
All right, to our live fans, stick around. We'll be right back. And to our podcast fans, you're about to be hearing words from a show that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey there, Bob.
What'd you do during break?
Bob? I went out to check on that blob.
And, yeah, how's the blob going?
It's still blobbing. Still just blobby. I tried maybe feeling how hot it was, but that wasn't a good idea. Burned my hand. But they're looking at it. I recommended lasers to treat that thing and fully keep it at a standstill. Or get like a giant water hose and spray it down. Melt it.
Melted, he says.
Yeah. How about you? What'd you do?
You know, in preparation for my my eventual moving into becoming a true crime podcast, I binged the greatest true crime TV show of all time.
What is it?
Murder, She Wrote.
Murder, She Wrote, Bob. Classic mystery. That's what started the true crime craze, I feel like. Angela Lansbury, right?
And yeah, Angela Lansbury, you are correct.
People love Murder, She Wrote.
I think the person who kicked off true crime would probably be Agatha Christie. My mother's listening somewhere, gasping that I mentioned Agatha Christie on my show, but you get the idea.
Agatha Christie.
Death on the Nile. Death on the Orient Express. Right? You get the idea. Anyway, it's like my mom's favorite writer, but I think that would be the one who started true crime, that and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the guy who wrote like Sherlock Holmes.
Well, wait. Now if we're talking about...
I think that's what got people excited about crime, yeah, and then people started looking into real life crimes like when they were looking at their fiction, you know?
Yeah, yeah. What about Diagnosis Murder?
With
Dick Van Dyke, right? Is that Dick Van Dyke?
Dick Van Dyke, yeah.
Not to be confused with Matlock. He was a lawyer. Matlock was a lawyer. That was two different shows. But yeah, Murder, She Wrote. The kids are gonna, you know, it's gonna go full circle, and kids will be watching Murder, She Wrote in no time.
Angela, you think so?
Lansbury. Yeah.
Thanks for letting me know my camera froze, by the way. Camera's fixed now.
It froze?
Yeah, we Sugar fixed it. Told me that we had some problems. So thank you, Sugar Cole. Appreciate you. Speaking of Sugar Cole, by the way.
I think that might have
been on Twitch. Did you see the lovely fan art I got made of me?
I did. That was cool. Who did that?
Yeah, Sugar Cole did that for me. Sugar Cole's in the chat right now. Next week when we're in the studio together, you could show it to the audience. It's so cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, shout out to them for making that super cool piece of artwork.
Yeah. That could be your panic. That could be on a business card.
You know how long it's been since I've gotten fan art of me as a not Ghostbuster?
It's been a while.
Been a while. And it was a very nice surprise. And then they also shared with us the Bob After Dark Discord also drew this dude, Moist Penguin.
Yeah.
Do you know who that is? He's a famous YouTuber.
I don't know if I know, but the name is funny.
He's the long-haired dude, and he goes, "Oh, yeah, baby."
Okay, I've seen that before.
Okay, yes. But so, yeah, no, I got some, very, very cool stuff. Exciting.
That's
stuff.
Cool. Very nice.
All right. So, Count Panic, are you ready to sink into the lore of the week?
Yeah.
So, there are times when I sit down and I research a topic and or sometimes I try to figure out what we're going to research or what we're going to do next. And then sometimes you just draw a blank and you're like, what can we do? And then we go back to what we know the best. And that is the SCP Foundation.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you remember the SCP Foundation?
What does it stand for?
Secure, Contain, Protect.
Okay.
The SCP Foundation is a group of creepypastas or fictional stories on the internet that people submit in, and a council of people go over them. And it's essentially like X-Files or Warehouse 13. They're items that have some kind of supernatural or sci-fi or some kind of entity that has some sort of like unusual characteristic. There's some classes and how they class them. It's safe, meaning that the object just has some anomalous properties but is generally safe. Euclid, meaning that if it gets out of control, things can go really bad really fast, but not like they could contain it. And then there's Keter, which means if it not contained, it can end of the world situation.
Okay. That makes sense. You broke that down good.
Count, we've done this several times.
But it's been a while, Bob. You figure after all these binge watching 575 episodes, I'm going to remember.
Like we have 203 episodes.
Well, counting the radio, it's 575.
So, yes. Oh, thank you. Sugar says they love the SCP Foundation. Hey. The SCP Foundation's good stuff. So that's what we're doing today is I've picked out five random ones, and we're going to go through them.
Before you do that, you want to take a phone call?
We have a phone call. Take it live.
Take it live.
You're on the air. Call you on the air.
Now, this is John calling.
Another John.
Hi, other John.
Hey there.
Hey.
Asking, now, I got a weird question for you. Any Bigfoot stuff?
Oh, Bigfoot.
Oh, we've covered Bigfoot. Bigfoot on the show.
Do you have
before.
A favorite Bigfoot story, Bob?
The one that takes place right here in Northwest Indiana.
There was a Bigfoot sighting in
the Robin. What woods were they?
In Hammond, Hessville. I'm gonna forget.
Oh, local historian.
Oxbow Park. Yeah.
Yeah, Oxbow Park, or the Park. Ones that take place in Cook County Forest Preserve.
Yeah.
I've got a story.
You got a story?
When I was a kid, back at farm down in Mississippi, me and my cousin were on riding on a tractor, and my uncle turns around real fast, and we were right near the edge of the forest, and I fell off. And I turn around, and there, what do I see? Is a big 8-foot. When I was a kid, it was tall as the eye could see, but 8-foot Bigfoot, me being maybe 12.
Wow.
And ran away, never saw it again.
That's crazy.
Did it make any noises or just kind of stood there?
We caught each other's gaze.
Sure, that's interesting.
Ran away. Never saw it again.
Huh. Well, thanks for calling in and sharing that story. We don't get a lot of Bigfoot sighting call-ins.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
Well, thanks. Big fan. Well,
thanks,
John,
thanks
we're a fan
in,
of you.
John,
thank you for telling that story. It's very rare you get to meet Bigfoot himself. That's cool.
All righty.
Continue on. Carry on, John. Take care.
All righty.
All right. How about that, Bob?
How about that? Bigfoot story.
And people, again, we encourage stuff like this. 219-845-1100. I never had the chance to actually run into one. That might be a good thing, but what would you do in that moment? I mean, what do you think?
Seeing a Bigfoot?
Yeah.
It was.
Really stop that.
You see a. Excuse me.
Yeah. You're clumped.
The previous caller sounded really familiar.
Yeah.
But to think that you just caught the gaze of it, and that's interesting.
Yeah, just a gaze. Yeah. Just a quick glimpse.
Just a quick glimpse.
Yeah.
All right, so you ready to dive into the SCP Foundation's ones we have here? I picked out some Euclids.
Sure.
I think I have a safe one and a couple of Keters.
Let's hear it.
All right, so our first one is SCP-119, Object Class Euclid. SCP-119 is to remain open and unplugged at all times except during testing. Open and unplugged at, the door to the room with SCP-119 resides to be locked for all periods except during experimentation, when with the entry codes given only by authorized research and security personnel. An industrial grade disinfectant will be available nearby at all times, and the inside of SCP-119 is to be heavily disinfected before any testing. The contents of SCP-119 are to be monitored through the viewing window on SCP-119 at all times during testing, and will be stopped immediately should contents become hostile or otherwise damaging to the SCP. SCP-119 is a Panasonic red-acted microwave oven. It's initially discovered by an agent who bought it from liquidation sales assets of Redacted Valley Vineyards. It is believed that the Redacted Valley Vineyards was using the anomalous properties of SCP-119 to rapidly age its products and create expensive vintages like wine. Records show that the Valley Vineyards making under-the-table sales vintages dated back as far as 19 Redacted, many, many years before the company's inception in 2005. Whoa, that gave me the spookies.
What happened?
Thank you so much for... Hey, Neff, thank you so much for the subscription. We appreciate you subscribing. Much love. Gave me the spookies. Benefit of subscribing to the Twitch was you don't have to worry about commercials. So thank you so much for subscribing. We appreciate that.
There you have it.
You didn't hear the wolf howl, did you?
No, I didn't hear it.
No, you won't hear it. It's on my end.
That's what gave you the spookies?
It gave me the spookies.
I just thought something happened in your room there. I thought you got a ghostly encounter.
Yes. SCP-119 appears to be a stranded model of a microwave in all respects except the magnetron, until it does not produce microwave radiation. Instead, the magnetron emits previously unknown type of radiation that accelerates time. The amount of time accelerated is based off of the time input given at the start in the power level setting. The time input allows for 3 digits, and there are 5 power level settings. On power level 1, the number 1 of seconds input equals the number of seconds experienced within the microwave. Therefore, an input of 30 seconds would cause the microwave to run for 30 seconds, and the end object will have aged 30 seconds. Each subsequent power level past 1 increases the acceleration of time. At power level 2, an input of 30 seconds, the microwave will run for 30 seconds, and the contents will be 900 seconds or 15 minutes, or 30 plus 30 seconds. At a power level of 5 with an input of 999 seconds, the microwave will run for 999 seconds, and the contents will have aged 31,929,964 years old. Experimentation with the other buttons of the microwave have not resulted in anomalous properties, although they do still function as they would expect in a normal microwave. The minute plus button, for example, adds 60 seconds, and the defrost function prompts the user to open a door, flip the contents periodically, processing the minute plus button during operation. However, does not recalculate for adjusted time of acceleration. Merely the contents of the age pre-calculated rated at another 60 seconds, power level 2 for 30 seconds, which age for 900 seconds, 15 minutes, an input of a minute plus would result in the microwave running for 90 seconds and aging the content 2,700 seconds or 45 minutes, and so on and so on. SCP-119 can be dismantled, and replacement parts can be substituted for every component except the magnetron. When placing the magnetron in any other microwave, including duplicates of the same model, the magnetron continues to exhibit time acceleration. However, replacing the effects of anything above power level 2 have failed in every model except the original microwave in which the magnetron was found. SCP-119, like all standard microwave models, will fully function if the door is closed. During reconstruction, it was determined that disassembling the closing mechanism allows the device to work while open. Subsequent testing determined that the radiation emitted from SCP-119 has a fallout pattern similar to a microwave radiation if replaced. However, further experiments operating SCP-119 while open now require the approval of clearance level 4 personality. Addendum. After subsequent testing, it has been determined that the accelerated time experienced within SCP-119 is not accelerated from the perspective of those being affected, instead causing the occupants to preserve that they are simply staying inside the microwave for an adjusted duration. Should living creatures be exposed to SCP-119 for extended durations, they could quite simply die of starvation, as they will require much sleep and food while they would be outside SCP-119. Therefore, further experimentation with living beings now requires the approval of clearance level 4 personnel. Furthermore, due to its possibility of microorganisms undergoing accelerated evolution within SCP-119, industrial-grade disinfectant has now been added to containment procedure for SCP-119. What do you think, Count Panic?
Yeah.
A microwave that ages things.
Well, you know what? That's what microwaves kind of do in a sense, right? They age your food. You got frozen chicken nuggets, and then you got... they age it to make it heated chicken nuggets, so... yeah.
Yeah.
This doesn't surprise me at all.
Doesn't surprise you at
all. Nothing shocks me these days.
So you put now here's the thing. If it worked backwards, would you be able to make chickens out of the chicken nuggets?
What came first, the nugget or the chicken? I don't know. So you're saying there should be a mechanic way to, like, put hot food and make it reverse it, right? Make it frozen.
Something like that.
Yeah. Sure. That could be a thing.
All right, Count, you ready to move on to SCP-217?
217, sure.
Object class Keter. Special containment procedures. Containment areas to be kept behind two reverse pressure airlocks, chemical slower sterilization, full contained atmosphere hazmat suits, and a 24-hour post-interaction quarantine and testing for mandatory for all personnel entering the containment area. Should be containment for be breached, the blast door for containment and research will seal, and chemical agent ZEER-217-11 will be pumped in the air. I don't know what that is, but that sounds pretty serious. Any humans exposed to SCP-217 are to be contained for held for observation. Any items touched, those affected by SCP-217 must be sterilized. Description: SCP-217 is a virus incurable by current means with an infection infectuary at 100%. It infects all organisms in the kingdom Animalia and can be spread via touch or contact with bodily fluid. SCP-217 is very hardy and can survive for years outside the host body. The progress of the infection is very slow, and with some subjects going several years before manifesting any symptoms. SCP-217 alters the biochemistry of organic tissue, causing organic matter to rearrange into a form of organic metal. The processes involved with this change are not yet fully understood, but the advanced stages are well documented. A subject will begin to turn into a complex arrangement of gears and clockwork. These taking over the former biological functions. Advanced stage infection is reported to be very painful, but earlier stages are often unnoticed, while very vague feelings of confusion, insomnia, and joint stiffness. Hearts are replaced by gears and small tubes, joints are by the gears, networks, and eyes by the structures are unlike primitive hand crank film cameras, etc. SCP-217 shows first on the outside of the body in all creatures except mammals. In mammals, it first converts the internal structure before manifesting outside of the body. This can cause those infected to go for very long periods of time without knowing the infection of SCP-217. It's even been shown to totally convert the inside of a body before any externally viable symptoms. SCP-217 has infected several major metropolitan areas, most notably Redacted.
Okay.
The mental state of those in the middle of the advanced stages have been shown much diminished. Subjects respond in repetition fashion, are very dull and mechanical in action, and easily are distracted or confused, and appear generally irritable when faced with new problems. In addition, researcher fully converted brain has data expunged. Document number 217-6, Notes on Symptoms. Subjects infected by SCP-217 have at early stages reported no major symptoms aside from increased lethargy and a general lack of emotional response. Some have reported feeling a fluttering or moving under the skin, coupled with a persistent ticking noise. The noise... Sorry, folks. Increased lethargy and lack of emotional response. Some have reported feeling a fluttering or ticking under the skin, coupled with persistent ticking noise. This noise seems most prominent when an SCP-217 infects the shoulders, neck, and head. However, it isn't audible for recording equipment if pressed against infected areas. Initial infection of SCP-217 has already been stated almost undetectable. As infection advances, subject will begin to feel a sharp tearing pain in areas that feel converted. It has been compared to a knife wound or a deep muscle tear, and can persist for hours or several days depending on both the subject and the affected area. The new clockwork organ appears to tear and rip in tissue for a short time before fully becoming integrated and setting in surrounding tissue, and this is believed to account for the pain. Areas infected appear to be metal, mainly brass, steel, and iron. Other substances have been reported appearing to be leather, rubber, glass, wood, and other basic materials. Despite appearances, it purely organic material and even carries the subject's DNA. Organs and tissues affected appear more resilient than normal, carrying the same strength and density as the materials they resemble instead of normal tissue density. Areas damaged repair over time, but is very slower in standard human generation. Damaged areas can be instantly repaired by replacing damaged areas with new parts of the same type. Testing has shown that no ill effects of parts made from normal material, steel, leather, wood, replace the existing biomechanical clockworks. Most alarming, people infected with SCP-217 can continue for months, even years, without being detected. With infections so easily spread, hundreds could be affected before proper containment could be enforced. Infection appears to spread quickly in large offices, malls, and other large concentrations of people. Note, anyone or anything suspected to be confirmed by SCP-217 is not allowed near SCP-882, which is a gear type of SCP. So what do you think of that one, Compan?
Yeah, Bob, don't let them mix, I guess, there for sure. That one, again, maybe not as the last one. I mean, I'm still thinking about freezing hot stuff here, but still eerie in its own right, Bob.
Maybe it will.
Yeah, well, I'm still on the chicken nugget freezing.
You're stuck at the microwave?
Yeah, the reverse microwave formula. I think I'm going to get on that.
You're going to get the microwave that advances time?
Yeah. <hard. laughs> Just step in it, yeah. We're going to have to figure it out.
Sugar says one of their favorite SCPs is SCP-610. But you know, Count Panic, we were going to do a couple more, but we are running out of time.
We spent too much time on the blob.
We did spend a lot of time on the blob, so how about we read one more?
Sure.
All right, so pick this your favorite. Next one... What?
Pick your favorite.
This one is SCP-425, Object Class Euclid. SCP-425 is to be kept in a standard containment unit lined with a Faraday cage. Most staff with a security rating of level 2 or more are permitted access to SCP-425, with the exception of being staff that were born on days of the month with multiples of 8, example 8, 16, and 24. staff were born on these days have proven to be susceptible of the negative effects of SCP-425. So I'm safe. How about you?
I guess, yeah, sure.
I mean, I can't remember. What's your birth date?
Well, what did they say again? I'm May 19th.
Okay, so you're good. You're not in the multiples of 8. I knew it was May. I couldn't remember if it was 18th or 19th.
My math is correct, and I should be okay.
You should be good. Yeah. SCP-425 appears to be a 1958 Philco tandem periodic television set, and it was first reported in 1963 by the owner of the unit, Mrs. Redacted, originally contacted the FBI regarding the SCP, stating that it had begun to behave erratically at certain times. She reported to the FBI that her son, Redacted, had been having terrible nightmares that had scratched infinity equals 8 in the left side panel of the television set. Mrs. Redacted further reported that although she had unplugged the set, it continued to broadcast without power at certain times of the day. Embedded agent Redacted had become aware of the situation and brought SCP-425 to the Foundation. SCP-425 was brought in and studied for 6 weeks by SCP staff with no conclusive findings. It was initially classed as safe on 3463 when it turned on by itself and began broadcasting. Of the 5 staff in the room at the time, 4 experienced shared vision of what they described as infinity. They also reported hearing an animal sound that seemed to be coming from the walls. These 4 staff members, while somewhat alarmed by the experience, felt a general sense of well-being. They described the feeling as knowing that there was something else there out beyond us. And this description was repeated verbatim for these staff members, who were separated and interviewed immediately after the event. They were given no time to speak after prior interview. The 5th staff member, Subject Zero, provided a differing account of the experience. Subject Zero described the vision more extremely quickly than moving extremely quickly through space in the event of a horizon of a black hole. The vision then took Subject Zero through the black hole, at which he experienced a crushing sense of oblivion. Subject Zero also described an animal noise, but reported hearing whispering beyond the noise. Subject Zero was not able to interpret the whispering, but was sure that it was not English or any human language. Subject Zero was extremely shaken by this vision and whispering and reported reoccurring nightmares for weeks following the event. Extensive psychotherapy assisted Subject Zero to some degree, but he would report having nightmares for at least once a month. He reported that he no longer took comfort in accompanying others and felt lonely in groups and friends. SCP-425 was classified as Euclid at this juncture. Furthermore, studies showed that on the 8th, 16th, and 24th day of each month, SCP-425 broadcast for a period of 8 minutes at some point in the evening, generally between 2000 and 2324. It will broadcast only once during the day. Each study volunteer members resulted in mixed experiences. 5 staff were placed in the room containing 425 and were asked to watch and see what results. It took 6 months of testing to determine the subjects were born on specific dates susceptible to negative of experience stemming from 425. Of the 23 subjects who experienced oblivion vision, 17 had the results mirroring the Subject Zero, 4 had requested reclassification and amnesia treatment, and 1 left the site containing 425 and was never seen again, and 1 reported no ill effects. See addendum, which we'll get to. At this point, SCP-425 was placed in a Faraday cage, and no staff member born on one of those above noted days have permitted access to it. While it's an enclosure, SCP-425 will turn itself on, will but not broadcast. It is presumed that the broadcasts are non-terrestrial in origin, but in efforts to pinpoint the source of a transmission has proven fruitless. On 8-8-1971, staff member Redacted had what it described as a grand mal seizure at the staff canteen. Medical scans showed that Mrs. Blank's brain had a massive lesion in the shape of a nonagon in the parental robe. She was otherwise fit, and there was no evidence to suffer this injury. Mrs. Redacted was placed under medical observation. On 8/16/1971, Mrs. Red acted had begun to speak in an unknown language for a period of 8 minutes. When questioned, she was unable to explain why or what she had said. On 8/24/1971, Mrs. Blank left her room at the medical wing, walked to the nearest blackboard, and drew an extensive and impressive astronomical map of unknown region of space. After she completed the map, she collapsed to the floor and died. Autopsies reported showing no biological reason of death, and her study of a parental robe showed that non-agonal lesion had ceased to exist. So, Count, what you think?
Yeah, Bob, I mean, that's very eerie as well. All these have kind of a similar theme, of course, as just random eeriness goes, but again, I still go back to that first one you mentioned tonight. Still stuck in that first one. That's my favorite.
Absolutely.
The aging microwave.
Count Panic, do you have any closing words for our audience this evening?
Oh, Bob. Closing words? Yes. I think we're going to tally the votes now. Bob will jump off a plane. I think
I don't know, Count Panic. Some people didn't get a chance to get their votes in if they think I should go.
Get your votes in by midnight.
Get your votes in by midnight if I should go skydiving. I don't know.
Skydiving, Bob.
No.
Think about it.
I'm thinking about it. All right. All right, Count Panic. I just want to.
How about if you landed in a pool of cheese?
Oh, my word. Count Panic, thank you so much for.
What about the. Okay, yeah, sure, Bob. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here as always. I'm Bob After Dark.
All right. And to our audience, we just want to say goodnight to all of you. And to my mom, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And to my dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.